June 28, 2013, it's the Drupalize Me Podcast. Drupalize Me. Okay, well, before we get this podcast underway, we've got a few events we'd like to let you folks know about. First off, we've got Drupal Camp Colorado, June 29th through the 30th, where our very own Lullabot, Jeff Eaton, is delivering the keynote. There's Drupal Camp LA, July 13th through the 14th. Drupal Camp NYC, Nice Camp, July 13th through the 14th, where myself and Dave Burns will be teaching the Community Tools Workshop. We have Drupal Camp Toronto, July 13th through the 14th, again, where a nice very own Lullabot, Andrew Berry, is going to be delivering the keynote. Then we have the Twin Cities Drupal Camp, July 18th through the 21st, where Emma and Joe will be teaching the PSD to Theme workshop, as well as with Andrew and Emma and Joe, they'll also be giving sessions through the week at the Twin Cities Drupal Camp. Finally, we've got the Capital Camp, July 26th through the 27th. If you're looking for any more Drupal-related events in your region, those can be found at drupalcal.com.
All right, well, this is the Drupalize Me podcast. We are on podcast number 21. I don't know if we're climbing up fast, but that is a good number for us. And this is the podcast BDD, BHAT, and Drupal. I just kind of learned a lot of these terms. Just a little history here. Everyone at Drupalize Me, we all love to learn. So we thought it's time to learn something new. And well, what can we learn? And I guess we've decided to learn this BDD and BHAT, which, again, like I said, were new terms to me. And we went out in the field and found the best that there is that we found, and that is Melissa Anderson. And she is spending the week going over pretty much what all of this is. I'm learning tons of new terminology. I didn't even know what BDD was, and it's some very interesting stuff. So let's go ahead and just have a podcast about this and get Melissa on to let you guys all know what we're learning, because it's pretty cool, interesting stuff. So on the podcast with me as well, I have
Joe Schindler,
as well as
Emma Westby,
and our special guest
Melissa Anderson.
Thank you for being on with us, Melissa. It's I'm sure this is probably your first Drupalize Me podcast, and it's a pleasure, and we've actually had a lot of fun. We're all sitting on webcams hanging out for 2 hours a day, and now it's time to just podcast it up. So glad to have you here. I guess the very, very first question, which I asked myself when I was told we were doing this, is what the heck is BDD?
It's funny. That's what I had to my first response is like, what is BDD? I had to Google it. It's like, oh, behavior-driven development. Okay, what is that?
Yeah, that didn't help me much either.
But yeah, maybe we could talk a little bit about like the concept of behavior-driven development and what that means, and then how some of these other things like BHAT relate to it.
That just makes me want to say, Melissa, where did BDD come from?
Yeah, I have a slide for that. So behavior-driven development came out of the Ruby community, and the person most associated with it, I think, is Dan North. He was teaching people about test-driven development, so we get to kind of go backward through a bunch of DDs to get at what this is. Test-driven development, coming out of extreme programming and Agile, was the idea that we need to loosely couple code so that we can reliably make changes to it. And so we want to write code in a way that we can test so that we always know that when we're changing things, the code continues to run. So it's this red, green refactor circle in TDD that says write a test for what you're going to do, then write code to make that test pass, and then change things as needed. And so you go in this cycle. And what he found when he was training developers on this methodology is that they had a lot of questions about what should I test? Where do I start? How does this all work? And test-driven development is very developer-centric and code-centric. So in the process of doing that training, he discovered that there was a real need to answer those questions and to focus instead of on the code base, to focus on the user experience with the code base. So part of behavior-driven development, the behavior is the behavior of the application, just to be clear. So you're testing application behavior. And part of the thing that came out of that too was a need to focus on business value. So there are like three core principles for BDD. And it is not a technology. It's a process. And so Behat and Mink, like Joe was mentioning, like, we'll talk about those later. Those are tools. But it's about process for improving our conversations and writing better software. So we want to make sure that the software we're building is the right software to solve the problem at hand, whatever business or organizational need is there. So the idea is to increase conversation and the quality of our conversation by having a ubiquitous language for talking about our website so that everybody on the team is communicating and is more on the same page. So that's one of the big parts of the philosophy, as well as that all of the things that we are building have a business value, that there's a reason for what we're doing, and that if we can share that information, we can build better applications.
Earlier, Melissa, you said the A word. You said agile. Is this something that only fits in with an agile process, or is this something that you think can be used in sort of, I'll use my air quotes, any circumstance?
Well, because it's a process and the goal of the process is fairly high, that is to have better conversations and build the right software, it can fit into different development styles, but it really shines in an iterative development environment. So in terms of improving conversations, if you have a waterfall development cycle where you try to specify absolutely everything up front and all the things you can think of, and then you hand it off to the developers and they go code and come back, you can't possibly be following the process because you stop having the conversation. That being said, do you need to have Kanban boards and have a Scrum Master and change all of those pieces to start to think about it? I don't think so. I think that it is a way of very pragmatically getting toward the benefits of Agile without necessarily having to become a rule-following, Kool-Aid-drinking proponent.
Aw, man.
I kind of feel like there's, like, even outside of the scope of Agile, there's like there's so much benefit to being able to, like you said, just have a common language that everyone on the team or involved in the project can use in order to talk about a behavior on the website. And that one of the interesting things that I've kind of taken out of the last couple of days from us talking about this is that it's really useful in the context of trying to define those features and to get assumptions out on the table and to get people kind of thinking about all of the things that it is that they're going to build. And, you know, whether that's in an agile context or you're just trying to scope out a project, I think that's a really useful tool.
One of the things that we've been talking about is test coverage. So maybe, Melissa, you could tell us a little bit about in situations where you've seen this working most effectively, how does that kickoff process happen? And yes, I'm going to insistently call it process throughout this and not call it a process. Oh, Canada.
So there are a couple things when we're talking about the process itself. It begins with sales. It begins with discovery at its most valuable, at least from my perspective. When we start to think about what we're building and why we're building it, and to codify that and formalize it, we're going to get the most out of it. But there's an entire development cycle, and so it's possible to come to it from different angles. And when you come like with an existing website and you say, okay, I want to start using this in its testing capacity, you have one thing. And when you start at the very beginning and say, all right, we're brainstorming about the site, we're thinking about it, this is a tool for discovery to help us find out what we don't know. And so part of the BDD philosophy and process is comparing software development on certain levels to manufacturing. So we do things repetitively when we build websites. We figure out what it is we're supposed to build. We build it. We test it. We deploy it. We have security updates, all of those sorts of things. And as we try to optimize that process for an organization, we want to look at what our biggest constraint is, like the slowest machine in a manufacturing line. And what the folks who write about BDD talk about is how ignorance is the greatest constraint in software development. Typically, what slows a project down, what bottlenecks it, is the things we didn't know that we didn't know and that we discover when we're halfway through the project. And we sit and that slows things to a halt or takes them away from our best estimations. So we want to make some assumptions along the way, like we don't know everything. And we need to check often that our assumptions are on track, both with the business owner and technologically.
Let's jump into specifics for just half a second. What's the favorite, your most favorite BDD test that you've helped to, or even that you haven't helped to be a part of, but that you've actually seen implemented? So what would be an example of an awesome thing to test that has really helped?
Workflow. Testing any complex workflow is the most tedious, mind-numbing, error-prone job when you have to do it manually that I have ever experienced in my life.
I wouldn't know anything about tedious in Drupal at all, ever. Explain this concept to me. It seems so foreign. Oh,
I've been working on
amazing.
These features for Drupalize Me with like various states in our sign-up process. And it's like, you know, walking through Ubercart sign-up, you're 10 pages deep into filling out this form just so that you can see, oh, yep, that code executed. Well, let me try it again to see what happens the next time I do it. And it's just like over and over. And it's kind of cool to me to think about, you know, these tests, even in the context of just being able to use it as a quick way to automate all of that clicking is appealing.
Yeah, it's a big part of what got me involved with BDD in the first place is having worked on Drupal.org's Git migration with Sam Boyer. And that's how I found out about it. Sam said, you should go learn this. So I did, and it was amazing. We spent all of the time that we were working on Drupal.org and Git manually testing. I don't know how many hours we spent on the phone because we needed to test a distributed environment. So one of the things that comes from this functional testing aspect is that, like, when you're writing a unit test, you're talking about your code. You're not talking about the workers that are running behind the scenes that are actually managing Git pushes or any of the things that hold together something like our Git process on Drupal.org. So we sit down, as soon as we've done any kind of merging of code, Sam and I have to walk through this series of tests. And it was really well done together where I'm performing the test and then he's looking at what goes wrong and fixing it as we go through the test process so that we can identify what it was we did for test patterns. We have it and then we can run that test and just dive right into the spot where there was a problem and figure it out is really the amazing benefit that I get out of that automation process. And it is the automation at the end of the day that's really exciting to me, because one of the things in the Drupal world that I've observed a lot, and I don't know if this ever happens with sites that you build, but people start out with these like great ideas that they're going to keep documentation so they can train staff and onboard people and share things with users. And that lasts for a little while. And then it just goes out the window. There's no benefit to keeping it up, and things diverge so far that it doesn't get maintained. So as we record features and scenarios about how the website behaves, the fact that we can later automate those means that we have living documentation. We have a reward for making our documentation accurate. And I like that a lot.
Yay, rewards. Yay, documentation.
So we're talking about automation with this. I think that this is a chance to sort of point out that like BDD or behavior-driven development isn't necessarily the automation part of it, but that you use other tools in order to automate that testing. So BDD is kind of describing the things that should get tested and what should happen when you test them. But then you use tools like, I maybe am going to butcher the pronunciation here, but BHAT, or in the Rails world, I think it's Cucumber, but these different tools that allow you to automate the tests.
Yeah, and one of the things that's worth pointing out with that too, so it's Cucumber and Capybara that work together in the Ruby community and Lettuce in the Python community, I think it is. I haven't spent a lot of time with that, and BHAT and Mink in the PHP community. The testing tools are supported with that code. So Cucumber is going to be using Ruby to support the automation of these sort of plain language descriptions of site behavior. And PHP is going to be used when we're working with a tool like BHAT. But they're language independent in terms of what they test. So we could use Cucumber to test Drupal.org as well as we could use PHP to test Drupal.org. It would be fine. It doesn't matter what the code that you're pointing it at is written in, because you're testing the application behavior. It's all interface driven, really, for the kind of work that we're doing. So the benefit and the reason I think we're really excited in the PHP community about BHAT and Mink is that we can capitalize on the development expertise, or the expertise of our Drupal developers. Right.
Right. They're, we already know how to write PHP. So
yeah.
why waste a bunch of time? Well, not waste, but why spend a bunch of time learning another language when you can do the same thing using PHP, which you already know? And so BHAT is beneficial for that.
Yeah, you don't have to do the context switching, and you don't have to run through the, oh, right, I don't need, I don't know, I need semicolons again, you know, kind of back and forth with the language switching. So it makes it immediately accessible and easier for a developer who's got their head in the PHP of the module they're writing or whatever that they're doing, and they want to go fix the test that's going along with it. They're not doing that context switch. They can go back and forth much more easily.
I found the pretty cool thing, though, was that to write the most basic of tests, I didn't need to know any PHP. So can you talk a little bit, Melissa, about sort of what we've been looking at this week as well? Like, how does it get incrementally more useful to a Drupal developer? If we looked at what we did yesterday in terms of just writing a test and then adding in the Drupal extension part, can you go through a little bit, even just the curriculum of what you're taking us through this week?
Yeah, so what we're doing right now is, this may be a little more detail than you want, but BHAT, BHAT basically is the library that parses a Gherkin file. Gherkin is the name of the syntax, and it's where you use...
I just have to jump in here. How come all of these things are named after vegetables, like lettuce and cucumber and gherkin, except for BHAT? Like, I've never eaten a BHAT before.
I wear a bee hat. Does that count?
I'm glad you asked, because that has been driving me nuts, and I didn't know if I dared to, so thank you.
Yeah, I honestly don't know why the rest of them are vegetables and we didn't get our vegetable. Mm. However, we didn't, so there you go. So bee hat is what parses this structured language. So you have a feature that says, in order to do something of value as a particular kind of user, then I need to be able to accomplish certain tasks. So I'm going to do certain things on the website. And that feature then is fleshed out with different scenarios, what we call the happy path. So when things go the way they're supposed to, like if I want to fill in a search box and I should get some results so that I can decide which product I want to buy. So that the language that's structured for that is called Gherkin. And BHAT parses that, and it's able to interact with your local file system. So that's what it does. Then you add Mink, which can be used without BHAT. And what that does is provides a driver that will let you take a BHAT test and go out and use either Selenium or Sahi or some of the headless like ZombieJS, other drivers, text-based drivers, to go out and interact on the web with applications. So you start with the language, then you connect it to the web. Then the Mink extension says, well, there are a lot of behaviors that we do on websites. We click things, we fill out forms, we press buttons. And each of these steps, like I visit a URL and I click a link, once we've said that, we can use that over and over. So you can say, I click, and then you just put what the user sees on the page for the link. You say, I click contact us, and it goes out and connects via Mink and goes to the website and actually clicks that link for you. So that extends it such that a site builder can come in and start writing a test, and they never have to code. And I'm not a developer first and foremost. So for me, I know what the application is supposed to do usually in my role on a development team. I know how it's supposed to behave and, you know, what happens when they do it right. And if they don't, you know, fill it out the way I wanted to, I know how to support that. And so I can focus very much on user experience and describing what's supposed to be happening without needing to involve the development team, because so much of it is reusable. And then on top of that, we add the Drupal extension. And that does all kinds of crazy, amazing things for the Drupal community. So that was something that Jonathan Hedstrom was instrumental in putting together when we were working on testing for Drupal.org. And Open Sorcery has been a huge supporter of both the work that we've done on Drupal.org as well as the Drupal extension. And that lets us do all kinds of things. So there are things particular to Drupal that we all know about. We know about nodes and users and roles. And so we inherit things that will allow us to log in, and we can use either the Drupal API or Drush for a remote site. And we don't need anybody to write PHP on our behalf. All we need to do is put in our feature file, given that I am logged in as a user with
the Wait a minute. You can just tell Behat to log in and it will go and do that for you, and you don't have to click on anything?
That's right.
That is so awesome.
And you have a choice of whether you're going to log in using Drush so that you can point your tests at a site that's not running on your local machine, or use the Drupal API. So if your tests and your machine are the same, then you can use all of the features of the API, and the Drupal extension connects you with that.
And so the Drupal extension then is responsible for providing additional steps to what Mink already gave us in terms of, so the basics that Mink has are things like, I can click a link, I can press on a button, I can see something on the page. And then the Drupal extension adds, it sort of gives it teaches our Gherkin language about Drupal terminology, like node or a logged in user with the administrator role and so forth. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. And we get to do the thing that the Drupal community does so well, and that is share what we accomplish. So instead of having everybody building Drupal sites figuring out how to solve the basic need of logging into a Drupal site, we've now shared that so that we can go tackle more interesting problems like testing the Vue's administrative interface or something.
So talking about Gherkin a little bit more, one of the things that was shocking to me was sort of like how fluid the language is and how conversational it is. And I think that it goes back to that idea of creating a language that everyone on the project can speak in order to describe a scenario or a feature. And so I wanted to like read this scenario in Gherkin just to kind of give a concept of like, oh yeah, that does sound like English. And then it also demonstrates like this is a really easy way for, you know, everyone involved with the project to describe a particular scenario. And so the scenario in this case is unpublished node. And literally the text that is parsed in order to test this is, given I am logged in as a user with the administrator role, and I am viewing a page node with the title Testing Things, and I follow Edit in the Tabs region, and I uncheck Published, and I press Save, and I click Log Out in the header, then the response status code should be 404. It's like, wow, that totally reads like English to me. There's like no PHP there. And I see how it can become a very powerful tool in terms of like, I could share this with somebody that doesn't know PHP, and they could get a pretty good idea of what it is that I'm trying to test here.
My scenario was way more simple. I had, given I am on the homepage, then I should see Site Install in the title region. That was it. That was all I had. And it worked. It was really cool.
Yeah, well, my website was way more complex than yours, apparently.
That's okay. My scenario was, Kyle, open up the command line. And then it just pretty much died from there. So,
Yeah, and I think that one of the projects that I've been working on in my spare time, which I have tons of, is that...
I think that was her ironic voice.
Yeah, I was making air quotes. So one of the things that I believe is that ubiquitous language that we can all talk about this and we can develop better software is an amazing promise, but it also is kind of a tease and not quite true. Because while it's really easy for me, because for some weird reason, I've been using the Unix command line way longer than I want to admit, and it's easy for me, and I forget that it is not easy. And the technical barrier to entry to actually touching the maintenance of this automated testing is really high. And I'm very excited about the idea, especially because of the way we work with Drupal sites, of opening up the participation in the automation to a wider audience. So for example, if I am the product owner and I also do some administration of my site, which Drupal makes easy for me, right? Because I can log in and use a web-based interface for that. Why can't I use a web-based interface to update the tests to match my changes? it makes complete sense to be able to do that. And it's not out there right now. So working on something that would allow me to update and run tests from a graphical interface so that I don't actually have to learn the command line and I don't have to deal with things on that level, I think would make it even more powerful to have the conversations and have that documentation that we create stay very vital.
The other thing that I thought was neat was that although we're working on getting our system set up, there's no requirement to write the actual test. Like, you don't have to have a test environment set up to be writing these features and scenarios. And it's kind of a crazy, like, yeah, it's not a Drupal feature, it's a Behat feature, but to be writing these scenarios. And I think that's pretty neat that all I need is a text editor. I mean, there's some funky stuff around spacing in some of the setup files, but in the tests themselves, it really is just a bunch of English words without any crazy formatting, which I thought was pretty accessible.
I like that. In that too, it's even if you don't get the Gherkin syntax quite right, or you don't know exactly the terminology for each specific step, I like that it still provides a framework to discuss a feature or a scenario, and that someone who didn't even necessarily know Gherkin or what the steps were could still write something pretty close to what the end scenario should be. And then a developer who did know what those steps were could come along and just kind of tweak it a little bit to make it something that was automatable. And I think there's a lot of opportunity there to, get people that aren't writing necessarily even the feature itself to talk using that Gherkin language about the feature.
Yeah, I like to caution people not to worry too much about the automation in the early parts. Like, the process of getting toward automation can happen, and it is still, like I said, somewhat in the hands of the developer or the more technical folks. But the conversation and the value of just describing what the thing is supposed to do so that it can be implemented, and then having your acceptance criteria there. So you're like, well, yep, it does the things that I was supposed to do. And then adjusting that as you go, automation is just that reward that makes you keep that accurate. And you don't have to think, oh, well, where did we have the conversation about the thing where we decided the whatever? Because you can centralize your process on saying, yeah, we have a description here.
Yep, I agree. Thoughts about good resources for people that are interested in learning more about BDD or Behat or Gherkin or any of these things that we've been discussing?
The documentation on the behat.org that covers Behat and Mink is excellent. It's from the ground up, so it starts with Behat, and then you layer in Mink, and then you layer in the Mink extension. So if you start at the very beginning, you don't get the benefit of the Mink extension's like pre-built steps, right? But it explains incredibly thoroughly how things work, and it's very well documented. So it is sometimes helpful, like from the Drupal community, to start with the Drupal extension, and it'll go get all those things as dependencies. But when you really want to know what's going on, it's a great resource. Anything by Dan North that's out there, if you look at Introducing Deliberate Discovery and the introduction to BDD and some of his articles on, I believe it's dannorth.net, is amazing. He's a great writer. Liz, and I'm going to mispronounce her last name, Liz Keogh, K-E-O-G-H, I believe it is also an extraordinary writer on the process of BDD and paying attention to having high-quality conversations. And I love her work in terms of inspiration for like writing really great software. So she's definitely someone to look toward as well. And then for some examples in the Drupal world, we wrote a lot of tests for Drupal.org. And so the Drupal.org BDD project, if you surf that up on Drupal.org, has some documentation that will give one example of how tests were implemented and a lot of food for thought, even though it's probably not the way that you would end up implementing them for sites where you are able to use the API. There's just a ton there as well.
Awesome.
One thing I just want to kind of bring up is we've kind of been mentioning that we've been working with you this week, and we're kind of describing stuff. It's difficult, obviously, because listeners have no idea what we've actually been doing this week because they couldn't see what we were doing. But just to kind of clarify something that I got out of what we've been doing so far was that we learned what this BDD is, but then it was very interesting how there's this process that we did that we went all together, which we could have been anybody involved in this project, and we all brainstormed together. And then we actually took that brainstorm, and from there, that actually helped us make features for our website. And then from there, we were actually able to then start testing those features. So it was pretty cool to see that nothing was wasted during the entire process of the project, from brainstorming to testing to automating. And that's kind of what we've been doing this week. And that was the thing that I found the most interesting, that almost like nothing was wasted. We thought about, okay, a user needs to go to our site and there needs to be a Twitter box on the right-hand side. And then how does that work? And then we could automate to make sure that that's functioning and it's working properly. And I thought that was just kind of the mind-blowing thing that, I mean, it's in the language. I did have some initial setup issues, but the language isn't that scary. It may be something different, but I just liked the fact that you started from one point and you ended in another, and everything in between kind of all melded together. And I thought that was pretty cool. And also, Joe, you've outused the word gherkin. You're done.
Gherkin.
Darn it.
So there's one other piece about the Drupal extension that is not much used yet that I'm pretty excited about, and we haven't covered yet this week, but we will talk about to an extent. And that is that the Drupal extension allows you to configure a directory, so say your Drupal installation, right? And you configure that in the file, and it will go out and look for features that you can use, well, feature step definitions is the technical term, but basically, if I have a module like, say, the WYSIWYG module, and I wanted to provide some things that would make it easier to test your WYSIWYG, which is difficult because the WYSIWYG loads in an iframe, and you have to do some special, like, twisted ways of getting, you have to switch into the iframe and do some testing that's not super easy. So I would be able to include a WYSIWYG.bhat.inc file, and the Drupal extension would discover it and allow me to use pre-written step definitions so that we'd have the opportunity to share, again, complicated modules. I think media would be a great example of a module that we could benefit from that, or even things that would make it easy to test that tokens are working the way that we expect them to. We can share those on a contributed module basis, and I think that's really exciting.
I can see that being really useful. You know, a lot of our modules already, they have tests in some form already with simple tests, but the idea of them shipping with sort of a set of steps that you could use in your BDD testing, and in order to test your specific configuration of the module, I think is really cool. Because so often you download a module, like media, I think is a good example, and depending on which checkbox you check and what value you fill into a couple of fields, that module behaves in some very different ways. And so if it shipped with those steps that you could use in order to write your features, it would make it a lot easier to test that, you know, yes, my specific configuration of the media module works. You know, I already know the media module works as long as the simple tests are passing, but so does my specific configuration, and that when somebody comes to my site and, you know, performs some action on the site, they get the desired behavior from the media module.
The other example that I was thinking of yesterday when I was talking to Melissa after the workshop portion was how awesome this would be to be able to run some tests on our pre-publishing workflow. So in a lot of cases, we don't want to make all the fields required because we piece content together for the videos, little bits here, little bits there, as it's available. You know, we may create some stubs initially and then add to it later. But ultimately, before a video goes live, someone has to go through and make sure that all of the pieces are there. And that was one of the things that I got excited about writing a test for. What if we could just push a button and know, yep, the content is safe, and remove the the possibility of Emma looking at it incorrectly because she doesn't do it all that often. But those kinds of things, you know, ultimately where it's a human going in and clicking around, not eliminate the human, but create a perfect human who always remembers to click on all of the things before approving a piece of content.
Yeah, that's something we haven't quite touched on yet, and we just talked around it a little bit, and I'd like to call it out directly, is that in a lot of the testing that would be done for a custom application, we have some pristine test conditions. But with Drupal sites and other sites where a lot of the value is added by non-developers in the database, we have a much more difficult testing environment, right? Because we don't necessarily know who all is making changes or who has access to what. And so being able to work with a copy, for example, of our production database with the specific configuration and the value that we added that isn't instantiated in code is one of the reasons that this is super, super exciting, because I know that I can do a ton to create a really complex and beautiful Drupal site, and I can't test the code because it is database driven. So being able to do that is part of what got me really excited about working with this, and then also using it to test my own documentation for tutorials is another sort of geeky thing that is really fun. So as Drupal security updates or module changes come out and the interface changes and I'm going to try to teach somebody how to use that module, I have to go through my tutorial directions before I teach if I'm going to teach the latest version of the software and see what interface changes have happened. And being able to just write the directions and automate that means that I can dive in and pay attention to the changes and know where I need to update documentation. So that's pretty exciting to me too.
That's amazing. I'm totally like, I need to do that for all of my curriculum stuff. I had a funny thing happen once where I was in the teaching a workshop. I'm in the middle of the workshop and we're like doing stuff on Drupal.org and I don't remember exactly what. And we go to lunch and we come back. I think it was the next day actually. And we come back the next day and Drupal.org had launched the new Drupal.org overnight. And I came back the next day and all of a sudden I was like, I don't know how to find anything. I guess we'll all learn this together. And totally kind of your story about that, or just kind of like automating or some way of testing the things that you have described in your workshop, are like, oh yeah, that's a valid use of this kind of thing. Now somebody just needs to figure out how to write a step definition for things like, this blog post is interesting.
Well, we're starting to get near the end. I just want to take a moment to thank Melissa for not only this whole week, but joining us on the podcast. And just to see if you've got anything to say maybe about what the future is with this type of stuff, whether it's Drupal related or not, where you see this going. Is there some new things that are on the horizon that are just going to make this even more incredible, or what do you see happening next?
Well, first I want to say thanks for having me, and it's been amazing working with all of you because it's a great group of people and lots of fun. So thank you for that. I really am most interested in two areas that are up and coming for the Drupal community. One is contributed modules, getting involved and giving us those step definitions and seeing writing this kind of testing for modules as a way for people to become involved in the community. So putting together like what those steps should be for a module and then working and doing small bits, it's a finite contribution. So it's not like you have to commit to being like the maintainer of a thing forever and you can get started and then trick you into becoming a maintainer, a module contributor. So I think that's pretty exciting. And then I'm very passionate about opening up the conversation and working on a web-based interface for this stuff so that we can have people who know all the things that we want to find out about what they expect the application to do participating in a very streamlined way.
Well, very cool. Again, yes, thank you very much. I just want to let everyone know, again, if you have any questions, you can always get a hold of us on drupalize.me on our contact page. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're just about everywhere you can try to be. And if you have questions or any ideas for our podcast, please let us know. We're always looking for something we can do for some new content and just keep things fresh and answer questions. So usually when Addie hands me the baton to do these podcasts, she's got like a closer of some kind. I'm always like, oh, I've got to come up with a closer, and I don't have a closer. So I'm just going to say, till the next time, and that's it.